This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Nancy O'Brien joins me live in studio. She is has the distinction and the honor of having served as mayor of Charlottesville beginning in 1976, and she is the first woman to have held that spot in the city of Charlottesville. How are you?
I'm fine.
It's
good
to see
you.
I'm good. Thanks for coming in. I've really been looking forward to chatting with you.
Thank you.
Let's just start with a Nancy O'Brien 101, where you're from and a little bit about your family and what brought you to Charlottesville.
Well, I grew up in New Jersey, where I was born. My father was a machinist, my mother a secretary, and a small town union, which is the commuting place for New York City. I went to Boston to the Mass General, and I'm a nurse. I trained as a nurse there, and moved around quite a bit before I came here. The family came here in, I think it was the late 60s, when my former husband got a job at UVA teaching in the medical school. And so we settled in and read the paper and listened to the radio, and there were some interesting things going on.
So you came to Charlottesville in the late 60s.
Yes.
Now, what was Charlottesville like in the late 60s? For those who are just joining us from Omaha, there was no Fashion Square Mall. There was no... In fact, Barracks Road was still relatively new. That
right.
did not... Well, they didn't have the grand opening until October of 59.
Right.
So Barracks Road really...
It was pretty new.
And that was the big shopping center out in the suburbs, was Barracks Road, right?
Right. Everything was downtown. And actually, I lived out near where the high school is now, Charlottesville High School. And it was a very suburban feeling there. That was a farm. And the Melbourne Road was just a two-lane, tiny little squirrely thing that connected to Park Street. And there was a farm, the Nichols Farm, there. And there were cows and horses and, you know, it was a wonderful place. And then suddenly things changed with the advent of the high school. But my youngest son grew up watching the bulldozers clear the land and watching the high school built. That was a great, great entertainment opportunity for a three-year-old.
Yeah, watching the bulldozers work.
Right.
And that's Charlottesville High School, right? Which opened in the 70s,
High School. Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking with Nancy O'Brien. So you said you got to Charlottesville in the late 60s. You start reading the newspaper. So tell me some of the things you got interested in here locally.
Well, there were a couple of things. One, there was a new road plan that had just been put together by a consultant that the city was considering. It included the Meadow Creek Parkway. It included a Greenbrier Parkway that took off at Brandywine, where the corner is, and then came out where Greenbrier Drive is on 29, that would have taken out that swath of nice woods and what is now the Rivanna Trail. There was also a lot of interest in the need for good daycare in the city. And someone I met as I moved here suggested the League of Women Voters would be a fun and interesting avenue for me to spend some time in. And so I joined the league, and I also joined my neighborhood in fighting those roads. Those were the two main roads we fought, the Meadow Creek Parkway, which I still oppose, and the Greenbrier Parkway, I guess you called it. But that it took us five different times to get that one off the map. It kept
the Greenbrier Parkway.
Yeah, it kept, funnily, it just kept reappearing, and then you'd have to go down and say, but that road doesn't belong there. So I don't know what was going on with that. But anyway, that was one thing. And then there was a need for daycare. And my former husband did a lot of surveys and statistics. So we developed a random survey of Charlottesville, and we went to every 10, got a whole group of people interested in this, and went to every 10 households to see what overall, how the need for daycare fit into the needs and desires of the community. So the idea was not to find out exactly how many people needed daycare, but how daycare fit in the overall picture of city needs. And we found it fit in a very important place, and it was a good survey. So that helped some other people as they were trying to find funding for different daycare centers that started up.
My guest is Nancy O'Brien, the first woman to serve as mayor in the city of Charlottesville, and we will certainly get to that. Tell me, though, first, because here you are talking about you moved to Charlottesville, uh-huh. and next thing you know, you're a community activist, community leader. Tell me about that process, because how do you go from somebody who's maybe listens to the local radio, reads the paper, watches the local news, who's interested and aware of these issues, but versus somebody who starts going to meetings and starts providing some leadership in regarding some of these issues?
Well, I think it happened because of the kinds of people I met and talked with. And a lot of that I would attribute to my early days in the League of Women Voters, where one of the things we did for recreation was visit landfills. There were more landfills around at that time, and Marcia Michaud and I drove and inspected every landfill. We became experts in water and sewer. So it wasn't the romantic kind of stuff. I mean, we were looking at the nitty-gritty of what made this community work. At the time, the city and the county had just come off an annexation fight that the city lost, and they were both making water and sewer plans separately. And they were going to run parallel lines up Route 29. And some of us didn't think that was the best expenditure of state money or local money. And so we met with the State Water Control Board and apprised them of this fact, and then they took that into consideration in what recommendations they made back to the city and county, which turned into being the Rivanna Water and Sewer Authority, which was developed during those years that I was watching all the meetings.
Which, for folks who don't know, is an organization that is sort of employed by or separate from the city and the county.
Right.
That was the city and the county created it and said, so that we don't duplicate ourselves here and that so everything is
right.
fair, we're going to both join the same organization that we create. And if I hear you right, it was born out of the efforts of you and some other volunteers.
I wouldn't want to take credit for that because I think my very good friend Betsy Rosenblum was the real expert there. But I will say that it was a real example of how well-informed, activated citizens can set the stage for good decisions to be made. This was the phrase that my friend Sandy Snook used often, that the big thing that the League of Women Voters did was set the stage for good decision-making. And by that, she meant that we looked at a lot of facts and we shared those with people, and sometimes we took positions, but mostly it was making sure that all the facts that we could find became public, that the questions were asked, the right questions were asked, and that then the decisions could go forward in an informed way. That was very important to me. That became more important to me as I went from year to year, but it became very important to me that the community understand the issues and the reasons for a problem existing, and then have some thoughts themselves about how that might be worked on, and then go down and do something about it. I think the last phrase was important. You had to go down and do something about it. So that meant you had to go down and sit in front of city council and stand up and say your piece. And people did a lot of that.
Do you think you saw, Nancy O'Brien is my guest, do you think you saw more of that in Charlottesville in the late 60s and early 70s when you were just getting started as a local leader, a community activist? Or are you seeing more of it now? Are you happy to say you're seeing more of it now? Or has some of that spark diminished?
I think a little of that spark has diminished, partly because you can watch it all on television much more comfortably in your home. but we were also on television, so it isn't totally that. I don't know. There's not that same level of activity of finding out things. There's a lot of concern about issues in the city on a more parochial basis of where you live and what's happening in your neighborhood. When it comes time to the overall larger issues, I think sometimes those neighborhood concerns take precedence over a larger public good. I guess I'll use that term.
Sure,
though
sure.
It sometimes gets in trouble. But there is a public good, and there is a time when things need to be balanced. And there doesn't seem to be a citizen balancing group, which was more or less what the Charlottesville had when the league was more active locally. And also the Chamber of Commerce did more of that. There were some other citizens groups, also the names of which I forget, but Al Clements was very active in one of those. And they were just groups of interested citizens who cared about this community, who took the time to find out something that they could act on or speak out on. And so it was more a cooperative effort than sometimes I feel now, but I'm not sitting there, so I don't really know.
Right,
and I'm
right.
not going down there. I don't think I need to go down.
My guest in studio, I am very honored to say, is Nancy O'Brien. She was the woman to serve as mayor in Charlottesville, the very first woman to serve as mayor. So let's get, how do you go then from being active with the League of Women Voters and driving around and looking at dumps and saying your piece in front of city council meetings in the early 70s to then in 1976 being elected the first woman mayor in the city of Charlottesville in its history?
Well, prior to that, I was appointed to the Planning District Commission, which is a regional agency created by the local governments that serves Charlottesville, Albemarle, Green, Fluvanna, Nelson, and Louisa. And I became chairman of that. And I really liked the Planning District. It's a very interesting place where jurisdictions get together and without a lot of heat can have more light. And so that appealed to me. So I worked on that for 2 years, and I was also appointed to the Planning Commission. And so it becomes sort of a logical step in one's mind that you're advising and suggesting. And so why not make decisions if what you're doing is advising and suggesting? Would you like to make those decisions? And then you struggle with things like, well, can I make those decisions? Do I have the capability to make those decisions? I didn't have a college degree. I'd gone to a 3-year nursing program. So I wasn't sure whether I knew enough, had enough experience in the, quote, right places to go ahead with this.
Tell me when you knew that you could do it. Was there an aha moment in your political career when you said, you know what, I can do this?
I think the landfills and the water and sewer did it. I know that sounds odd, but if you can understand what's going on with those issues that aren't particularly attractive, and you can understand the financing, you can understand the environmental issues, you can understand the need for localities to work together, the possibilities of doing that. I think that was one area, one time when I felt, well, I can understand these things, and not everybody can, or not everybody takes the time to. So I felt like I could after I'd done some of those things.
Yeah, and yeah. And you didn't, like you say, you didn't have an advanced degree in hydrology or anything.
No.
You just were willing to...
I was willing to slog it out.
Yeah, to read and put yourself in front of the people who did know these issues and could explain them to you.
And part of that, I also, we would examine the budget. And I was doing this in a sort of community of people who were interested. So there was a lot of give and take. And I found I could understand the city budget. So I thought, well, maybe I could do this. And then some people said, why don't you do this? So that was sort of if you want the aha moment, it was when somebody affirmed the fact that you were doing things in the community and maybe those things you were doing would be helpful at the city council level. Yeah. And they were people that I respected, that some of whom I was in awe of, some of whom I had tried to cajole into positions that I wanted them to take. And so to get that kind of affirmation was very important in moving ahead.
Yeah. Do you remember when you found out that you had won a seat on city council?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that night.
We were gathered somewhere downtown, I think in campaign headquarters. I can't remember exactly where that was. It was somewhere on the Mall. And I didn't go down there until I had a sense that I might win. But the two people that I ran with did not win. So it was sort of a mixed evening. But I remember feeling pretty good about the whole thing. And my family was very enthusiastic. My children, all of whom didn't really realize what was going on, but my two older children did. I think they were both proud of me and afraid I might embarrass them. And then the picture that was on the front page of the paper was hugging my younger daughter. And I still have that one.
Nancy O'Brien joins me on the program. She is the first woman to serve as mayor of the city of Charlottesville. You were elected to city council in 1976.
That's right.
Bicentennial year. I remember that year. Was the year that I'll never forget this. That was the year that my mom wallpapered my bedroom with all like eagles and drums. And it was, you know, the 200th anniversary of America. It was all red, white, and blue. I had a red, white, and blue lamp beside my bed. I'll never forget that. So this was, you're elected to city council, and at your very first meeting, your fellow counselors, because that's how we do it here in Charlottesville, They choose you to be the mayor. Did you see that coming?
I saw the possibility coming. I did not know for sure how it was going to turn out. It was a split council. There were three Democrats and two Republicans. And so there were nominations, which included Lawrence Brunton and myself. And politics, as they are, I ended up winning, but I wasn't sure when I walked in there whether I would win or not.
Yeah.
I knew it was possible.
Now, Nancy, this is, if I'm not mistaken, this was when the whole ERA thing was going on and the power of woman in America. I am woman. Watch me roar. And you're elected the first mayor of Charlottesville, first woman mayor. Was there this sense then of this greater responsibility, that this just very conscious, wow.
Yes. I think in those days that it was, I always felt like it was, we would have arrived when women could fail and it was okay because men had failed left and right and it was okay for them. But women and African Americans, they couldn't fail. They had to be perfect. So I honestly did feel a lot. I mean, maybe I didn't feel anymore. I don't know how other people felt, but I felt really like I had to do it right. And I had to be an example that would open the door for other women to do what I was doing. Now, the door had been opened for me by Jill Reinhart. Jill was the counselor prior to 76. And she served a very valuable term on city council. And she really did open the door for women. I opened a door just a little further.
Yeah. Jill, of course, was the first woman on the Charlottesville City Council. So you're up there, you're mayor. Do you remember this first meeting when you took the gavel and took control?
You don't take control always of an unruly group.
Well, when you first started herding the cats, put it that way.
Right. My first act, of course, was to open the nominations for vice mayor. And then we basically, there's never any business at that meeting usually. And so we then adjourned. It was a little nerve-wracking. I mean, I'd never been on television before. I didn't know what it was going to be like sitting up there. And I think the thing that sustained me was that I'd spent so many years watching local government, saying my piece about what was going on, studying what was happening, that I didn't feel like I was in a whole new room. I felt like I was in a new chair in that room, but that I did know what the basic issues were. It was just sitting up there on television was a little unnerving. But after you're there for a while, you just forget the cameras are on.
Yeah. What was the reaction in Charlottesville? I'm sure there were some old timers who didn't like it and probably a lot of folks who loved it. seeing a woman as the mayor.
Right. It was probably mixed. I don't recall a lot of that. I do recall getting an anonymous letter. Would I please change my hairdo? But other than that, I did trace that back to whoever it was. And I did eventually do that, but, that was, or I'd be walking on the mall. I think one of the more unnerving things was I'd walk down the mall and somebody would say, I saw you last night. And then there'd be dead silence. And you didn't know whether they liked what they saw or they didn't like what they saw. And you were sort of just passing like ships in the night. But that was a weird feeling. I saw you last night.
Yeah.
Or I watched you. And then, oh, really? But nothing after that. So that was sort of, that was a little strange. And I think the loss of my anonymity was a real thing for me.
Yeah. And hopefully you didn't embarrass your kids.
I hope not. They were a little worried about that.
Yeah. You mentioned the mall. Now, when you became mayor in 1976, that was the year, that summer, if I'm not mistaken, was when they laid the ceremonious last right. brick of the mall. Tell me about the mall. It was very controversial. Now, the decision to do the mall had been made before you got to council.
Oh, right. It was the middle part of the mall is what got done. It was like a block or two either way of Central Place.
And just so folks know, it has since the 70s when they did it, it has since right. expanded tremendously, both east and west.
Right. And I think two different times. We expanded it. Our council expanded it another block or two. And then more recently, it got expanded even further. So it's two or three expansions have gone on since it was done. The very first official thing I did was receive the last brick, the ceremonial brick. And of course, I had no official part in getting them all done. I just was going to, but it was such a fight. And Charles Barber and Mitch Van Yeres had been the only two who could vote on it as a result of some conflicts of interest on the other parts of the other three councilors.
So only two of five sitting city councilors actually voted.
Right.
And they both voted yes.
Yes.
To make them all happen.
And they went through an awful lot of very unpleasant public participation and also pleasant I mean, there were people who really wanted it, could see the vision. And so it was a hard fight, and it was hard to make a decision, I think, with warring factions in relatively equal places and major shop owners being against it or for it. I mean, the downtown merchants were a mixed bag as well. But they made that decision, and I got the brick, and it flew out of my hands to Charles and Mitch so they could lay the brick, because there was no way I was going to lay that brick. But anyway, I did. I was mayor, so I took it, but I gave it on to them immediately so they could feel the sense of accomplishment of something that they'd fought very hard for and yeah. The community fought very hard about.
My guest is Nancy O'Brien. Just to underscore that for a moment, because some folks may move here or visit here and think, oh, what a gorgeous mall. It was sort of a, you know,
right.
This was just meant to be, when in fact, this was incredibly controversial. You go back and read some of these Daily Progress articles about some of the city council meetings, you know, all the architects from UVA came down and said, don't do it. You're going right. to kill the city if you do this mall. Leave the street open to cars. And you were there at all those meetings and watched
right.
this happen, whether you were a citizen or and then later on council.
Right. It was probably one of the more tumultuous periods of time in the city as far as direction. They did make a very good choice in the architect for the mall. It is one of the successful malls in the country. In fact, the same architect has had several not so successful malls in other parts of the world. So I think part of it is that everybody just sort of dug in and made it work. And it changed. The whole place has changed. There were two large department stores downtown. There were a lot fewer restaurants. There was a really wonderful hardware store. So the ambiance downtown has changed quite a bit. But the town has changed quite a bit. So, you know, you'd expect that.
Yeah.
And at that time, all major department stores and were moving out into the suburbs. Sears moved off West Main Street, and they moved off West Main Street from a site that had the highest per square foot sales to the Fashion Square Mall, because that's what everybody was doing.
Yeah.
So downtowns really had to do something to maintain their centralness and their community importance.
And for folks who don't know, Sears was located where Stacy Hall is now.
Right.
University of Virginia has that now. It's called Stacy Hall, down on sort of the university end, down near the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved up. You mentioned Fashion Square Mall, which opened 80-81.
Right.
And you were, very, as a member of city council then, you were in all the meetings and saw this coming.
Yeah. They wanted to locate where Seminole Square is now. And at that time, there was only Kmart, and across the street was Drive-In Movie.
Yeah, the Ridge Drive-In.
Right. It was great. And so it didn't seem to be the best location for the type of thing that Fashion Square was purported to be. We had many meetings. We met with Mr. Farber, and who was the developer, and his nephew, and we met in twos. Two counselors would go meet with whoever, and there was a lot of public controversy. Was it the right spot? Was it a bad spot environmentally? Was this good for traffic? And all the usual concerns. And in the meantime, the development people were negotiating with another landowner to land where they are now. And I think they got a better land deal out there, and they took it, but they didn't tell us that. They kept saying, well, we'll do a traffic study and we'll come back. And that was a time when malls like that were putting in ramps from, you know, interstates and that kind of stuff so people could get there. So there was an awareness of what could happen to make it work. And they assured us they were working on it and working on it. And then they never showed up with their drawings, and then the night we were scheduled to vote, the vote was tabled at some point, and then the night we were scheduled to vote, someone got a call and said it won't matter. That was from the developing people, but contrary to what people remember, the Farber Mall, or the Fashion Square Mall, was approved to go at Seminole Square site. However, they had gotten a better deal, and they went out to the other location. But to this day, I run into people who say, well, you all voted it down. Well, the fact of it was it did pass, but it didn't matter at that point because they'd gotten what they wanted in another place.
Yeah.
And that's how that works. And then that place has been filled in with Seminole Square, and that is also a successful shopping center.
Right, right.
So there's a lot of shopping centers out there.
Nancy O'Brien is my guest, and the Fashion Square Mall, where it is now, where they went,
right,
when they cited that back in the late 70s, was that not just way out in the country?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. You could walk across the intersection then. I think Rio Road was probably two lanes, and 29 was probably two each way.
Wow.
So it was a different spot.
Yeah.
And at the time, because those two roads were the major roads out that way, it seemed like from a planning standpoint, it might have been a good idea. But that was where you ran into the city-county problem and the sales tax and the real estate tax and all that stuff. So all of that came into that discussion. Sometimes in a very heated way, sometimes in a very just sort of logical, you know, way. But there were a lot of feelings about the location of Fashion Square Mall. And those conversations with those issues keep getting repeated. They're repeated as you move out 29, the environmental issues, the traffic issues, the how many shopping centers can we have? Do we really shop till we drop, or are we going to drop before we shop, or what's going to happen out there, you know?
So these issues are very similar that we have now.
The questions
They're the
are
same
still
questions
similar.
You were debating
yeah.
back in the 70s
yeah.
when Fashion Square Mall came. We're talking with Nancy O'Brien. She's the first woman to serve as mayor in the city of Charlottesville, elected in 1976. And you served on council till when?
80. 1980. I just wanted to say something about the bicentennial, because the bicentennial in Charlottesville, the city council was led the first half by its first African-American mayor and the second half by its first woman mayor. And to me, that is a very important thing. It says something to me about Charlottesville and how it accepts and works with a diversity of people. So the fact that that mixture was there for the bicentennial year was a really, is a really important thing to me personally. I'm pleased to have been part of it, but I think I might feel the same way had somebody else been mayor.
Tell me about the sister city in Italy, because didn't that not happen when you were on council?
Yes, it did. The Italians around Florence were very excited about the bicentennial for some reason. And one day I got this little package in the mail, and it was a book in Italian about a fellow named Filippo Mazzei, who was a friend of Jefferson's. He had been on his way to the valley to start vineyards in the valley, and he, as many people did, he stopped overnight at Jefferson's, and when Jefferson talked to him, he discovered he didn't want this guy to go any further, so he bought Colley and put him to work putting a vineyard in there. And Filippo Mazzei and Jefferson did a lot of corresponding. They did a lot of discussing of the Bill of Rights, and there's written documentation of their letters about different aspects of the Bill of Rights. So there was this camaraderie that developed between this native Apogeo, Filippo Mazzei, and Thomas Jefferson over a very important thing in this country, the Bill of Rights, and also a very important thing to Jefferson, the wine.
Right.
So, and that certainly has taken off lately. So the first thing, we had this large delegation come from Poggio, and we showed them around and took them to dinner, had them to my house for a party, and Rob Cole served drinks that night in his Jefferson outfit. And then we were invited over there, and five of us went, and we formed this sister-city relationship, which was based on a relationship that took place in 1776. So to me, that's always been an important larger issue, that fact that this is an important thing to the American history, to our Constitution, to the Bill of Rights, to a friendship between Thomas Jefferson, who is a very revered person both here and elsewhere, and that this friendship grew out of it, and that we have had things like exchanges of political people going back and forth, soccer going back and forth, educators going back and forth. We did have a student exchange that went on during Frank Buck's tenure. And so,
and they're talking about trying to bring that back.
Try to bring that back. And just the expansion of people's understanding of other people makes us all more human. I think Mark Twain said something to the effect that the more we travel, the less bigoted we are. And that's not a direct quote because I never can remember those things, but just the idea of it all, the more we travel, the more we know other people, the less we're fearful of them, the less they're fearful of us, and the more likely we are to be able to get together and work together. To me, that's important.
Yeah. So, can I just, before we go, I want to ask you one last question. You move here, you're a nurse, you have kids, you've got family life, home life, and yet you find this time to get involved with the League of Women Voters. Next thing you know, you're with the Planning Commission and you're on council and you're mayor. It's and the very first woman to do that in Charlottesville. What do you tell folks now who are thinking, men or women, husbands or mothers, who are plugged into the issues, they care, they really care about their community. They're struggling just as you did, mm-hmm. with time, got a lot going on.
Right.
How, what do you tell them now about this very idea and the importance of public service here? You know, we talk about Thomas Jefferson.
Right. I mostly don't tell them anything. I mean, I think that if you're willing to work and you're willing to think and you're willing to listen to people, you can do that job. The question I always ask them is, why do you want to run? And if you can't answer that question in a couple of sentences with some very heartfelt feeling behind it, then maybe it isn't the right time. And sometimes it's the right time for you, but it's not the right time for you to run. So it is a matter of timing. All of that came together for me in a way that I don't really understand. However, it worked. It doesn't always work, and that's why some people win and some people lose. Sometimes it's not your time. But if you don't really know at your gut level why you want to be on that city council, then you need to go back in your den or room or wherever you do your thinking and rethink why you're entertaining the idea, because it's both very rewarding, but it is also a lot of hard work. It isn't always fun. But you can make it fun most of the time. I had a wonderful time. I met more people. I loved going to classes, showing the little girls that a woman could be mayor. It wasn't like their books. They weren't all white men. And other, they could start thinking. And you'd see this light bulb go off in a third grader's eyes, and you'd say, it was worth coming here. What I'm doing is worth it. So that was, but I think, but you need to want to do this for a good reason, that comes from your heart and soul, I think, then you can contribute.
Nancy, thank you so much. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Nancy O'Brien, the first woman to be mayor in Charlottesville, elected in 1976. It's been a true honor to have her here in the studio.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.